everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes, episode 110 of our weekly delve into SmackDown. My name's Kenny, and I'm joined as always by Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny, I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited by SmackDown again. Like, it's been really good, and it has the most compelling story going into the next pay-per-view, which I forgot was Hell in a Cell, and that's why I said the next pay-per-view, because I can never remember names of pay-per-views. But, yeah, so things are good.
So this week's SmackDown was a great show. Really good. Let's talk about it. So we opened the show with the New Day coming out. They are the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. So, of course, they are coming out to celebrate. They come out with... We see footage from their win last week. Xavier Woods talks about, you know, he gets to go to Dragon Con this weekend. They've got a few words to say, gloat about their win. Kofi talks about the Bludgeon Brothers being ferocious. Big E starts making references to being five-time champions. And then they are interrupted by King Booker, who comes out. And the New Day are, like, marking out hard. They can't believe it. Booker getting this huge reaction from the Toronto crowd. He is in King Booker mode. He introduces himself as the king of the SmackDown world. The New Day are kneeling before him. You know, Booker said that the WWE Universe would bear witness to the titles that he grants on the New Day. He calls... Xavier Woods, Xavier the Wise. He calls Kofi Kingston, Kofi the Brave, and Big E. Of course, the gag is that Big E is the biggest Booker T fan of all time and always references him on social media. Big E gets up and he feels like he's been skipped over. He's complained about his title. Booker told him that his title was already in his name, Big E. Then Big E accused Booker T of going full Saxton on him. Booker then says, "Tell me you didn't just say that." They then apologize. And then Booker T welcomes them into the Five Times Champion Club. They do their version of a spin-a-rooney. Booker T does his, and it's just a big feel-good moment. What did you make of the opening segment, Sandra?
I loved it. I loved every part of it. I thought this was amazing. This is the effective way to use nostalgia characters, right? Like, this is exactly how I want to see legends used. I don't want to see Shawn Michaels super kicking anyone else in the face. We know how I feel about The Undertaker. I want to see more things like this. I want to see King Booker returning with his ridiculous accent and bestowing titles upon people and getting to do a spinning Rooney with the New Day. This was awesome. This, like, because King Booker has been basically my favorite iteration of Booker T since I got the King of the Ring DVD that they put out, like, in 2011 or 12 or something like that. I think the last King of the Ring on it is Sheamus. So King Booker hosts that, and I was like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I love wrestling, because this was when I was still, like, more of a baby wrestling fan. And, yeah, like, I don't know. This was awesome. It was just a fun, feel-good celebration that the New Day are now five-time champions. And I love that Booker T and Biggie Langston are united by the love of the number five.
In one of those cool moments in wrestling when you're watching, you're going, oh, it'd be cool if Booker T came out when they're talking about five time, and then he does. It was fuzzy. I mean, I hated King Booker at the time, but I've kind of...
I've never actually seen any of his career as King Booker. I've only seen that DVD, so...
But in hindsight, I've kind of grown to kind of be endeared by him. But yeah, hot opening segment, feel good stuff. Then we get the first match of the tournament to determine the number one contenders for the SmackDown Live tag titles. It's The Bar, The Good Brothers, and The Colognes, who are still employed. We get a 10-minute match. It was decent. The Bar get the win in the end. It didn't blow me away, but it was fine. But The Bar were probably the right team to go through out of the three.
Yeah, definitely The Bar were the right team to go through out of the three. The match didn't really grip me. I expected it to be better, maybe. It's good to see the Colognes. Remember the Shining Stars? Remember the Shining Stars of the Caribbean?
Oh, the timeshares.
Those were good times. I really liked those days. And then they lost that. I mean, I guess they couldn't really be the Shining Stars of the Caribbean anymore since Puerto Rico's, like, completely fucked and our country's not doing anything about it. But, you know, I digress. The Bar won, and I'm really happy about it because Sheamus and Cesaro are awesome. And I am definitely looking forward to them being in the, you know, tag team final thing. I forget, who are all of the teams that are in the triple threat next week?
Next week is Rusev Day, The Usos, and Sanity.
That's going to be a really good match, too, I bet. And I don't know who I want to win. Ooh, that's tricky. So I think any of those three would be great against the bar. I don't think Sanity are going to win. I think it'd be great if they did, as kind of a random swerve. But yeah, the bar winning made me super happy.
Then we go from there to Rusev Day meet with Paige. They are entering the tag team qualifying match next week. Rusev acts surprised, wanted to thank Lana for making the suggestion to Paige, but she said it wasn't her. It was Aiden English, and Aiden said it's a great surprise. And they're celebrating together, and they're going to be facing the Usos and Sanity next week. And hopefully all is right with the world, and team friendship reigns supreme.
This is the best. This is number one. Clap, clap. Because what I love about it is that Rusev thought that Lana put Rusev Day in the match, right? And so he's going and he's like going to thank Lana and he's going to kiss her and all this stuff. And Aiden didn't interrupt and Aiden didn't take credit for it. It was Lana that said, nope, it wasn't me. It was Aiden English. And so she's not trying to take credit for what she didn't do. She is fully invested in them all being pals too, because she is the one that I'm worried about. You know this, that when, you know, she planted dissension in my mind the first time and I didn't appreciate it. So now I'm always kind of like watching her going, do you like Aiden or are you just being tricksy? It seems like they're all friends and pals and Aiden's being helpful and supportive of them, but not trying to take the spotlight for himself. You know, he's not interrupting their moment. He's not being like, hey, no, I did this. Like, give me credit. He's not being annoying about it. He's just being a pal. And I appreciate that. I love seeing friendship in wrestling.
And here's hoping they remain friends next week. We get a video package.
They need to, for my soul.
We get a video package recapping Becky Lynch's promo from last week, but they cut the parts where she makes fun of the crowd, which we'll come back to later on. Jeff Hardy makes his entrance. He has his face paint on with RKO on it because his new boyfriend Randy Orton gives out RKOs. Jeff Hardy talks about, you know, Randy Orton's obsession with him. It's changed the chemistry of his brain. Orton made him believe he could fly, and that's why he did what he did last week. He said that, you know, Orton might see him as some perverted object of his affection or some obstacle in his career. He said he was reinvigorated and felt the old Jeff Hardy again, that he had been rebroken by fate. He demanded that Randy Orton come out and let him finish what he started. And Orton comes out, says that he's not done working on him yet. The version of Jeff that he wants to raise is the one in the ring right now. He's just figured out how he's going to do it. He's going to leave him in a pile of broken bones. And he told Hardy that he wouldn't be getting into the rings on his terms. Hardy can call him the Viper, the Legend Killer, but he only needed to refer to him as the three most destructive letters in sports entertainment, RK, and then Jeff Hardy just starts screaming no. Hardy said that Orton was going to hell and he was coming with him, and he challenges him to a match inside Hell in a Cell. What did you make of the segment, Sandra, with Jeff Hardy and Orton continuing their love affair and the idea of it being in Hell in a Cell?
I think it's a pretty good, it's a good story. It really is. And I think they're executing it well. I am a little bit sad at the lack of Jeff Hardy poetry. I think we didn't get nearly enough exposition about the existential crisis of having a snake try to erase you and eat your soul. But overall, the story totally works for me. I was surprised that they're going to have this match in Hell in a Cell, because I guess to me, there are other matches I would rather see inside the cell. And I don't want to see 5 cell matches on that pay-per-view. So it's an odd choice to use this one, especially since it's not for a title or anything. And the story doesn't really seem to warrant it so much, but whatever, it's fine, I guess. It's not the story that I'm the most invested in on SmackDown, but that's not to say it's bad. It's just that there are other things going on SmackDown that are more on my radar, I guess.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. If you told me 2 months ago that Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton would be having a Hell in a Cell match, I would just scream bloody murder. But I'm kind of into it, so I like the idea. I mean, Jeff Hardy is going to fling himself off the cell, and I need to try and just make peace with that before it happens.
That's pretty much why they're doing this, right? Is because Jeff Hardy wants to jump off a cell, which is a terrible, terrible idea.
He's never done it. He wants to do it.
It's a terrible idea. I mean, he's like talking about how he can't do swantons on house shows because he's so broken and like beat down and stuff, and then now he wants to jump off a cell. Like, for why? Just stop doing these things to yourself.
We've got Jeff Hardy throwing himself off a cell, and got Carmella trying to give her best performance. Best segue I've come up with. Carmella's speaking to Renee Young.
Very nicely done.
Renee asks if she was concerned about the attention being paid to Becky Lynch and Charlotte. Carmel says that the attention follows the championship, and that's why she was the biggest thing in WWE for the past 4 months. She would prove it later that Becky and Charlotte were chump change and that Mella is money. And then she goes to leave, and R-Truth walks up and asks where Carmella went. Ty Dillinger pleads with him to leave her alone.
I love R-Truth. I love R-Truth. I think Carmella did. I mean, Carmella's promo was good. This whole R-Truth, like, kind of stalking Carmella because he wants to pin Carmella to get a United States title shot thing. Not sick of it yet. They might run it into the ground, but R-Truth and Ty Dillinger have great comic timing together, and for the few seconds that they're on TV, they're brilliant. So I'm a big fan.
Carmella cut a decent promo here. It's kind of the same of... It's not really hugely different than what she did before, but she's trying, so...
And she's able to speak and deliver lines, though, a lot more effectively than a good deal of the roster, which is a credit to her. And I think her pointing out that she's beaten Charlotte twice and she's going to make it the trifecta, like, I mean, she was wrong, but it made sense at the time, and I understand why she believes that.
The R-Truth stuff's really funny. R-Truth has won me back round after the PTSD that I have for the Golden Truth.
So. Yeah, and I liked the Golden Truth, so.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Oh, I loved it. It was an epic love story.
Okay. Then we get the Iconics. They come out. Billy Kay says she's clairvoyant. She saw the Toronto Raptors having a terrible season. She saw Naomi crying after this match. And that takes us into Billy Kay versus Naomi, and it goes like a minute and a half when Peyton Royce kicks Naomi as she was sent through the middle rope, and then Billy rolls her up for the pin. And man, the Iconics are just cold as ice right now.
Yeah, they're not doing a whole lot. I mean, the Iconics versus Naomi is kind of a lower tier story, is fine. I didn't like Billy Kay versus Naomi as much as I liked Peyton Royce versus Naomi. It bums me out that the Iconics have become so formulaic in what they do. I mean, they basically just come out, insult sports team, insult city. And I guess you could say Elias does the same thing, but there's just a different energy to it.
He does it well.
And there's what?
He does it well.
He does do it well. And the Iconics, I don't know what it is that's not really click. I think it's just them being formulaic and having to switch from, you know, like a more organic format in NXT to main roster scripted stuff. And maybe it's just overexposure too, because that could be part of it. Is in NXT we didn't see it every week. We saw it every other week or every 2 weeks. And
also, it's like I feel like I like them enough, but like sometimes acts just don't translate on the main roster. Like sometimes that just happens, and maybe that's one of their things. I don't know. Like, it's one of those things, like, Authors of Pain, you kind of go, why are they not having the fucking matches they used to have with DIY on the main roster? So it's like this kind of thing, but with the Iconics, it's, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I think part of the problem is, too, that, like, the main roster seems to think that the Iconics, like, what makes them great is them coming out and insulting a city and then insulting their opponent, but they haven't given the Iconics an actual story with anyone, right? Like, all they do is come out and just make kind of really shallow insults, and they are shallow people, but I would love to see them go after either another team or really go. I mean, they're kind of going after Naomi here, but why? Like, there's no reason for them to be upset with Naomi. I wish that they would give us a reason. Like, they steal her makeup or something, and then she is upset about it, and they're like, we thought you looked like a clown and we're trying to help you. And I mean, this all sounds real stupid, but I think that's something that they could make work. But instead, they're just like, Naomi's gonna lose and we're Iconic and you're not. And that's it. And that's flat and that's shallow and that doesn't have any weight behind it. Whereas, I don't know. I would just like to see them have more of a personal issue with someone if they're feuding with them.
I guess we'll see how they go. My fear is that they turn into Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, where it's just like they're kind of there.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I wish that we could do more with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville too, because I feel like there are options. Like, why don't we have the Iconics versus Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville?
Could be something. I mean, I know it sounds I dread to pitch the idea, but like maybe in some ways SmackDown does need like another half hour somewhere. for like
No.
storylines that don't take place on the show. Because there's not enough room to put like those, like if you like that story.
There's not enough room if you want to see everyone every week, but you don't have to see everyone every week.
True.
Like the Iconics coming out and doing the exact same thing on the ramp is part of the problem. They're not doing backstage stuff. They're not mixing it up. They're not mixing up the environment. It's just all on repeat.
True, true. Poor Naomi. I like her.
I like Naomi too. And I hope that she gets retribution on them. Like, I feel like this has to be leading to something. Like, she's going to get a tag team partner or I don't know.
So up next, excuse me, is the segment with, excuse me, with Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan that leads us into the match. But I want to ask you, first of all, there's been a lot of people on social media, a lot of people in various platforms who have been really, like, hammering this Bella hate out.
They hate the Bellas online, don't they?
And I just kind of wondered, like, I know that you like them and I enjoy them as well, but do you have anything to say about the kind of the way that people are feeling about it? Is there anything that you've anything that's come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of Bella hate, a lot of Bella hate, and I don't really understand why. It's so why they have so much vitriol toward the Bellas. To everyone who just hates the Bellas, by the way, this is how I feel every time The Undertaker comes back. Just putting that out there. And I know that that's not going to be a popular thing, but it's, you know, like the Bellas are being brought back as a nostalgia kind of act. But the thing is, like the Bellas' careers weren't cut short because they wanted to leave wrestling necessarily. I mean, Nikki Bella, her body quit on her. Like, that's why she had to leave wrestling. I think Nikki Bella, if she had her choice, would still be wrestling more often than she does. But her neck doesn't allow her to do that, right? Like, she was taken out of action. And I guess, I mean, I like the Bella Twins as an act. I really like Nikki Bella. Like, I don't understand people who say Nikki Bella is bad in the ring. They're not talented. They can't do anything. I think you're just thinking of the Bellas, you know, in 2010 or whatever, when they couldn't wrestle. They really couldn't. It was bad. But they both have grown and changed and done a lot. And I guess I don't understand people who say, like, they're relics of a Divas era that we've moved on from and they can't have good matches. Like, that might be true for Brie some. And we haven't seen Brie in a while. Like, we don't know what she's been working on, what she's been training with Brian. Because I thought that was it the six women tag or was it the Total Divas versus Not Total Divas tag or whatever Brie Bella's retirement match was on the pre-show of WrestleMania that one year? She actually did pretty well in that match. And she came out with like her transition into the yes lock at the end was kind of awesome. So I don't think that it's hopeless for Brie Bella. I think Nikki was the one who wanted to put a lot more work into wrestling and get better in the ring. But I mean, I guess if you see them as relics of a Divas era and you'd rather move on from that, I guess I get that. And you're entitled to that opinion. But for me, the Bellas kind of are the women's evolution. Like they are the ones who moved through the Divas era and did what was expected of them in the Divas era, but then also were a part of, like, they were definitely a big part of the women's evolution too. Like, I'm sorry, but they were. And not just because of their reality shows and their outside exposure, but because they got better at wrestling, especially Nikki. Like, Nikki's had some really, really good matches. Some of her stuff with Charlotte was great. Her match with Natalia, I thought was excellent. I loved that match. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that her body gave out on her just as she was starting to get really, really good in the ring. But I think that one of the reasons I like the Bellas so much is because they managed to last through the Divas era when a lot of women in that company did not last. Like, I mean, people glorify Trish Stratus and Lita so much, right? But how long were they even wrestling?
Trish was wrestling for 5.5 years and Mickie James was about the same in WWE.
Yeah, in WWE. And that's the thing, too, is people are like, well, why are they coming back? Because they're from the Divas era. Like, Mickie James was also in the Divas era. Like, she was there before the Bellas. Like, I guess I just don't understand some of the arguments. I guess it's just what it represents to people, like, in their minds. But
the one thing I do understand is that their delivery is pretty bad at acting when they're not.
Their promos are bad, yes.
When they've not got sinking their teeth into it. Like, I totally understand where people are like, oh, you know, they're not for me. My issue is more just the, like, there's stuff that, like, I'm not going to name stuff because if I do, I'm just becoming the thing. But like, for me, it's just I would not spend my... I just don't feel like I should spend my time telling you what to like. I mean, like, but the difference is, it's not like... I mean, if somebody used to say to me, right, okay, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, you know, Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25 was a bad wrestling match. Like, come on. That's just not the case, right?
So it wasn't a bad wrestling match at all.
So you would 100% have to be like, well, you are just wrong in that regard. Like, you just are. There's something you just are wrong about. But, like, if you don't like something, just don't watch. Or don't look at it, don't see it. But, like, it's the idea that what seems to be happening online is people are just like, oh, my God, I can't believe the Bellas are around. Da, da, da. It's like, but it's actually very easy to understand why they're around, because they do bring
in... And those same people were really excited to see Trish Stratus back on Raw, right?
Yeah, I think Trish had this thing where she managed to overcome the stigma. You know, we'll see it when we eventually get to her in retro. She does really overcome it. I think the problem that the Bellas have is that the Bellas kind of embrace being divas, and I think that that's something that a lot of wrestling fans associate with bad wrestling, which I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I think that they did, the end, the last couple of years, they did do some good stuff. You know, Nikki did do some good stuff when she was the champion and facing Charlotte when, like, Becky and Sasha and that came up on the main roster. But that's not what the main stuff they're remembered for. I just hope, but my hope is that they are able to turn it around and do something decent. So, like, for example, in this segment, I thought Brie Bella was really good here in this segment. I thought that she helped get some heat for four other people. So I would say that she did well here. But I think part of the reason that Brie did well here is because it was kind of realistic, right? Because it's her and Daniel Bryan. They're married. Like, so she feels
And her
less...
delivery still isn't great. I mean, she you know, she still talks like she's being scripted.
I quit!
You can't come at her husband and, you know, but she's trying. Like, bless her. She is terrible at acting. But you can tell that she's really putting in the work. And you can tell that she does believe what she's saying. There's conviction behind it. It's just like saying scripted words doesn't work out. She would do better if she just went out there and was like, look, Maurice, you can't come at my husband and you can't, you know, expect me not to stand up for him or whatever, whatever. Like, let her use her own words, because she can do that. Like, she'll probably misspeak and use some words that don't exist. But that's, you know, part of the endearing thing about the Bellas is that they're not great at words sometimes. I'm not great at words sometimes. It's fine. There was a Twitter thread, actually, that I quote tweeted and said a very good thread and said that, you know, people should read it. And it's, how do you pronounce this name? C-I-A-R-A.
Say that again?
Like C-I-A-R-A. Like, I want to, like, credit the girl who did the Twitter
Kira.
Thread, but how is it? Kira?
Kira, yeah.
Kira, okay. So, Kira Reed, it's at Kira92189. Like, I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's kind of long, but she just didn't understand, like, the slight, like, the people getting angry at the Bellas and stuff. And two of the tweets I thought were the best were, like, instead of getting mad at the women, we should redirect that anger toward WWE and not sit around and tear Nikki and Brie apart for doing their job and actually wanting to do it, right? Like, because she's talking about, you don't have to be a fan of theirs or anything like that, but it's twisted logic to be so gung-ho against them having a simple match or getting invited to a media appearance, but then claim to be invested in this evolution. Like, I do agree that more women gain more opportunities than others. However, the Bellas have not one but two reality shows and are businesswomen. Therefore, any company would place them out in front as representatives, right? And if WWE is always going for mainstream appeal, I mean, they put Rock and Cena in the main event of WrestleMania instead of a title match, for instance. That's what WWE does. So it makes sense to me to have the Bellas there if, you know, if you're looking at a company like that. And then my favorite tweet was the last one in the thread that says, you cannot uplift an entire division, praise WWE for rebranding the division, praise them for opportunities, but still practice separatism by pinning the quote-unquote deserved against what you consider non-deserving. So it's kind of the whole, like, I don't know, I've talked about it on SmackDown before, but I don't like the idea that, you know, divas or, like, really pretty women who are into fashion and are into their looks and are into outside stuff, like, there's still a place for them in wrestling, especially if they're putting in the work and doing their jobs and doing, you know, what they're expected to do. It's not like they're fucking, like, Sable, who just didn't want to take wrestling classes or whatever because she wanted to be a star. Like, they're putting in work and everything. So I agree. I thought Brie was pretty decent in this segment. I loved this segment. I thought it was good. It's nice to see some genuine emotion. Like, there was a moment leading up to the segment where Brie and Brian, I think, were backstage. And Brian had Brie, like, punch his hand, like she's kind of shadow boxing. And he, like, takes his hand and recoils, like, oh, she has such a hard punch. And it was just adorable. Like, it's kind of nice to see the nice husband and wife. Like, this to me feels more authentic than it when it was John and Nikki. And I liked the John and Nikki mixed tag with Miz and Maryse, too. But I think because Brie and Brian are just kind of known to be more down to earth and they're more just, like, about their family and gardens and things like that, they're very endearing together.
So basically Brie and Daniel Bryan come out, they talk about, you know Miz must be feeling it from last week. Brian didn't cheat at SummerSlam like Miz did. Brie then gets the mic. There's a Brie chant briefly. She said it felt good to punch Miz last week, even though she was gonna have to Maryse. A wife can only sit back and take so much when someone disrespects her husband. Miz and Maryse are always cheating together, but Hell in a Cell, they won't have anywhere to run. Brian said his wife punching the Miz was hot, and she's a diaper-changing Miz punching hot mama, and at Hell in a Cell, they would kick Miz and Maryse's ass. That brings out Andrade, Cien Almas, and Zelina Vega. And basically, that Zelina Vega and Almas want a match. Daniel Bryan's like, well, you know, if you want to wrestle, and then nothing happens, and Brian's like, when I was a general manager, like, I used to go, now make the match. And then Paige comes out as if, like, she's ran from the other side of the building in heels, and she's out of breath, and she's like, I'm sorry, my office is far away, let's do it, let's have a match, let's get a referee.
Well, because Brian had gestured to the ramp, he's like, if only there were someone in the back who could make this match, and then there was just awkward silence for a while.
And that leads us to Daniel Bryan versus Andrade Cien Almas. They had a very, very good 13-minute match, which really showed that they, down the line, could have a great pay-per-view match together. You know, there's tornado reverse DDTs or a near fall. Almas goes for a moonsault, but Bryan gets his feet up and puts it into the yes lock. Zelina jumps in the apron, but Brie kind of pulls her down. And as that happens, Maryse runs out from behind and shoves Brie Bella into a post at ringside. Miz then attacks Brian in the ring, causing a DQ. Almas does his hammerlock DDT to Brian, and then Maryse puts Brie in the corner and allows Vega to hit the double knees, and then Miz hits the skull crushing finale as Miz and Maryse stand tall kissing like gloating bastards. I thought this was really, really good, all of this.
This was excellent. I mean, there's a lot to go through there. I liked when Zelina Vega came out and said, it's an honor to be in the ring with two legends, Brie Bella and Andrade Cien Almas. And Daniel Bryan's just like, all right, Zelina. Right, sure. I did not expect Zelina Vega and Andrade Cien Almas at all. I was super into it. I kind of love how many, like, pairs, like, mixed pairs there are in WWE right now, because we're not even doing much with like Naomi and Jimmy Uso being together, but they can always be a pair too. Makes me really want an intergender tag division where you can actually do intergender wrestling. But this is so much fun, right? And it's again SmackDown not just using the same characters interacting in the same segment, but like using their whole entire world at their disposal. And it gave us Andrade Cien Almas versus Daniel Bryan, which a year ago was a match that I just thought would never happen because it didn't seem possible that was ever going to be a match that would happen. And it can, and it did, and it was great. I like Brie Bella coming after Zelina Vega. I like the fact that she kind of evens the odds there. I think she's very effective when she's with Brian. I think she's more effective when she's doing the stuff with Brian than the stuff, from what it sounds like on Raw, seems kind of less effective to me. But I haven't watched it, so I can't
remember. I mean, all she's really doing is doing backstage segments where it's like, hey, we're back! And that kind
right,
of stuff is
which
like,
there's not a lot to latch on to there, right? Like, this is a good story.
And then next week they're facing the Riot Squad.
I might watch that, actually.
Fucking Riot Squad, man.
I love the Riot. Like, I love Ruby Riot, and I always will, so.
Listen, Ruby Riot, no problem with her, but she's in a shite squad, and they throw plastic cups around, and they've had the same match with the same two women for 17 weeks.
And yeah, that's
no, and there is no story as to why they're wrestling each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's annoying, for sure.
Like Ruby Riot in NXT, though.
No, Ruby Riott, she's great. Like, she's a great wrestler. I would love to see her do more than just be in a squad.
I
And I
also.
don't like, or have the squad do something interesting. I don't know, but it's not my show.
I liked that this got over. It gave Almas and Vega some heat. They got heat out of it. I liked that Miz and. I do think we're in dangerous territory of like Daniel Bryan kind of has to get a one up on them soon because it feels like Miz and Maryse always end up outsmarting him.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'd like to see that maybe happen, but I really just thought the whole thing was like Brie was. I liked the beatdown on Brie, especially because it kind of gives you that kind of element of like he brought his wife out there to try and because she was going to help him, and then she ended up in a worst case scenario because she got beat up by these two women.
Yeah, because normally I'm not a fan of like if a wrestler is about to win a match, right? Because Daniel Bryan was about to win the match. And normally, I'm not a big fan of like, why did you release the submission hold just to deal with a distraction or something like that? But when it's Brie Bella being chucked around by Maryse and getting the living piss beaten out of her, I can see why Daniel Bryan would break the hold to, to check on his wife and make sure that she's okay. Like, that does make sense to me. And then I like the fact that Ms. Maryse interfered for the disqualification. It wasn't just like Daniel Bryan got distracted and rolled up and pinned, right? Because Daniel Bryan should be smarter than to succumb to a musical distraction. He's been in this company long enough that he should know better, and it seemed like he did. So I think that they avoided some of the tropes of WWE that I dislike the most here, and that made it a very effective segment. And I just, yeah, and I like the mixing because Andrade and Zelina don't have a story going on right now necessarily. I would love if they had like Andrade and Miz kind of on the back burner, or Andrade and Bryan rather. I mean, Andrade and Miz could be good too, but if you have like Andrade and Bryan kind of on the back burner as something to go to after this, as a result of what's happened here, I'd be all about that. There are possibilities, and it seems like even if Andrade doesn't have like huge stories or personal issues with someone, he's kind of just like a lurking character in the background that's still very effective in terms of getting other feuds over without losing anything himself.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see where it goes from here. Almas looked great though, and the whole segment for me was really effective. It's prolonging the feud. We're then gonna go to Hell in a Cell and have the mixed tag. Then we go to the Superstar Showdown, and it's the chance for one of them to get a title shot. That could go either way. I think they're doing a really good job with the Brian Miz thing. That's
Yeah,
my
they are. They're managing to keep it fresh and not repetitive.
Then we had Renee Young interviewing Charlotte Flair about Becky Lynch. She said that Becky thinks she deserves the championship, but you don't deserve anything you don't win. She doesn't believe in participation trophies, and she won't apologize for her success. And she then said that she's done running. Well, after she's done running through Carmella, she'll give Becky the spotlight she wants. It didn't feel like a 100% babyface promo to me.
That's because it wasn't a 100% babyface promo. It
But
was
I
someone
don't
who's
even.
pissed off at her former friend.
Yeah, like but what I mean by that is it didn't feel like that was scripted to be a completely babyface promo.
No, it was scripted to be someone who's pissed off at her former friend. Like, I think we saw on the show, and later on we'll see more, but I don't think there is a babyface or a heel in this situation.
I
I
think
think they're
last week.
actually letting the crowd choose.
Yeah, I think last week there was in their head, but I
Yes.
think they have learned from last week.
And I think that is a credit to them because them actually listening to the crowd and learning and saying, no, we might need to adjust. Like, that's what you want from wrestling, right? Wrestling is not a static thing to present to a crowd. Like, it's an organic back and forth between the crowd and the company producing the wrestling and the wrestlers themselves. And it really seems like they're listening in this case. And that, I think, made Charlotte's promo feel more authentic too, because if Charlotte was just smiley babyface Charlotte about this, then I wouldn't believe her either. I mean, if she wasn't pissed at Becky Lynch and if she, wasn't trying to stick up for herself, then, why should I believe Charlotte at all? Like, that just would feel inauthentic. But it feels a lot more authentic when she's like, no, I'm pissed. And yeah, I mean, I did what I had to do. I would expect Becky to do the exact same thing. Why is she mad at me? That feels like a real human reaction to something, and that's what makes the story good and compelling.
Yeah, I mean, I think when wrestling is at its best, there is a villain and a hero, but I think that you can have a journey to get there. And I feel that's the journey that we're on. And I think that's, it's like you say, it's more interesting to kind of have these two friends that are kind of going through this thing. And Charlotte just like, I mean, all the imprints are there for her to be the heel. She came in, she took the title shot, she beat her friend. But yeah, I was just glad to hear that when we saw the Charlotte Flair promo that it didn't feel, I didn't feel like I was watching Roman Reigns, which has been my fear since SummerSlam. So that's
good. Yeah, and I think they're in danger of that for sure. But I think they're playing it really smart. I do. And we'll talk about it more when we get to the Becky segment.
So then we get AJ Styles coming out. He said he's the champ. He makes the rules on SmackDown. He demands that Joe make his way out of the ring and he's going to knock his teeth down his throat. Joe then gets in the Tron and says he's not going to go out there tonight. He's just proven his point. And while he's out there playing superhero, who's at home playing a role model to his kids? He talks about how he's not being daddy yet. He then brought out his phone, called Wendy, asked about Annie, said he would keep AJ's promise and send him home. And then he said he'd stop by for the back-to-school barbecue, save him a plate. He said he'd be by the house next Tuesday. AJ then runs backstage, and that's the end of the segment. And it's like, I can't believe that AJ Styles and Samoa Joe are fighting kind of over Wendy Styles, and I kind of love every single bit of it.
It's one of those things that on paper seems like it should be really cringeworthy, but it's kind of awesome. And Samoa Joe is just such a dickhead, right? And then AJ Styles has become kind of unhinged. I mean, after this, AJ Styles is, you know, looking around backstage and, you know, grabbing crew people and whatnot, looking for Samoa Joe because he's going crazy about Samoa Joe, like, messing with his wife. Not, like, in a sexual way, but just, like, you know, like mentally getting in her head and that kind of stuff. And I would be scared if Samoa Joe is threatening to come to my home uninvited. Like, that's not cool. I'd be like, I don't want that. You're Although a big scary monster, man.
I'm all about seeing him at the back to school barbecue next week. Bring it on.
Oh my gosh. I want nothing more. I want to see him show up to the back to school barbecue. I do find it interesting that we're acting like AJ Styles only has one child. Like, where are all his boys?
This is true. Well,
are they at boarding school or something? Could they, like, I don't understand where they are. We know that he has four children. They're all tattooed on him. There was an episode of Superstar Inc. about it.
Well, he lives in the South, so they're all at, what, like, gunshoot range camp or something?
Yeah, that could be.
But that takes, yeah, so it's curious that their match is not going to be in the cell.
I thought for sure theirs would be in the cell. Like, I would have picked their match in a cell way over Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton in a cell. I mean, I guess you kind of have to escalate the Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton situation, kind of, but like,
I mean,
I
guess what are AJ and Joe going to do in the cell? Maybe, I mean, I'm hoping that they have an idea of what they want to do that makes that make sense. Is my hope. Because, I mean, if it is just one of those things of like, you know, the match they want them to have doesn't really need to be in the cell. And they have specific plans. I think the Hardy and Orton one needs the sell more in terms of, like, AJ and Joe is just kind of good.
I figured it would be in a sell, especially given the way the last match ended with AJ attacking Joe with a chair and everything and then getting the disqualification but remaining champion. I thought Joe would demand a no disqualification match or demand the sell or something like that, you know, to protect himself and take away AJ's championship advantage. I mean, maybe it will be no DQ.
Yeah, or maybe it does get put in the cell, but they announce it later on.
Maybe it's
Wendy on a pole.
I don't think it's going to be Wendy on a pole. Annie on a pole. Annie on the other pole.
Anyway, so we'll see what happens. But it's main event time. Charlotte comes out against Carmella. They have this 13-minute match, and it really should have been about half that. But what I will say is that I thought Carmella did a decent job of, she tried, right? And it's like, it's so, I don't want to be the guy that's like knocking her because she is trying, but she's just not the sort of person that can have 14-minute matches. Neither does Baron Corbin, you know? But Baron Corbin, there has been a couple of times where he's been involved in good matches with like two other people. She's trying, and God bless her. She's just kind of the afterthought to what we're about to talk about, but
But before we get to what we're about to talk about, I thought this was Carmella's best singles match by a mile, and
oh, yeah,
I think she has gotten a lot better.
But I think we're in danger of, like, I don't think that she could now be in matches week to week to week that would be good. I think this would be like a once in a blue moon we'll get a match with a Charlotte or something where it's good. But I don't know. I would prefer to see Carmella. It's funny because you were talking earlier on about the whole like, the diva thing, right? About how you don't like the idea that somebody's not valuable. And it's like, for me, I see so much value in Carmella as a second to someone. I just feel that's where her strength is. She's got a lot of charisma. She's a good talker. She's got personality. And if she did the odd thing here and there, like a kick and a dive, as somebody who's like helping somebody, I just feel like that would be more to her strength. That's just for me.
Oh, I think it would, but I think what this match showed is, because for a long time you said you didn't see any improvement from Carmella, and I think we've seen incremental improvement from Carmella because like she is working hard, like she's obviously putting in the work. But I think this match and her performance in the triple threat as well, because I think she was pretty good in the triple threat. I mean, Becky and Charlotte obviously helped a lot, but
she was much better in that triple threat and this than she had been in any of her title reign before it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that shows that she is putting in a lot of work, and she is improving, and that means that there is a chance that she could get better. Like, do I think that she should be the champion because she's trying really hard? No, I don't. I still think that it is a better idea to have her not as champion, but I think there's definitely a future for her, and if she continues improving on kind of an upward trend like this, then it's not hopeless for her in the ring either. Like, I think that she could get to the point like Nikki Bella did, where she could be having really good matches. And I think that depends on what opponents she's able to work with, because if she's working with people like Charlotte and like Becky, and you know, like if she could work, she's on a different brand, but like if she could work with Ruby, or she could work with Ember Moon or whoever, then it seems like she could actually get better. And maybe that says something about Asuka too, that, you know, Carmella and Asuka didn't really have good matches, but Carmella is able to have better matches with someone like Becky or Charlotte. I don't know. I think it's interesting, but I want to shout out Carmella for her improvement in the ring specifically. She still looked out of her element against Charlotte, and she lost, as she should have, right? Like, she was out-wrestled by Charlotte because she should have been out-wrestled by Charlotte, because Charlotte is a better wrestler than Carmella. And so that made the match make sense, and it felt authentic and valid to me. But I really liked this match. I thought it was quite good.
She has improved. You're right. I don't think that she's improved to the point where it's like, let's... I think she's improved. I don't know if I want to say more than Lana, maybe. But I feel like I've not. I feel like I need. To
I think she's improved more than Lana.
I feel like I need to see a couple more matches. My gut says that she's improved more than Lana, and Lana's been wrestling for a while. Anyway, after the match, Charlotte gets the win, does the figure eight. Carmella taps out. We get Becky rushing Charlotte from behind. The crowd in Toronto just went mental. She drops her, lays it out with kicks and punches. Grabs a microphone, says, you know, when you see me come hell in a cell, I'm taking my title back, you bitch, and then flings the mic down. Okay, am I in Bizarro World, right, which they didn't say for Raw and SmackDown, which was nice. Is it just me, or like, that last line had to be designed to get a cheer, right?
Oh, 100%. 100%. They know. Like, they know that Becky's not going to get booed at this point. At least they should know it, because the entire crowd, like, even during Carmella and Charlotte, you know, I mean, they were putting on a good match, but the entire crowd was chanting, "We want Becky, we want Becky, we want Becky," right? So, of course, when Becky comes out, Becky's going to get a huge reaction. Becky feels like Stone Cold Steve Austin at this point, right? And I'm not saying that facetiously. Like, she really does. She's getting the types of reactions that like Daniel Bryan used to get even when Daniel Bryan was a heel. Remember when Daniel Bryan started getting the biggest reactions? It was when he was a heel and people wanted to see him. And then he turned babyface because everybody loved him, right? And with Becky, like, they've tried to turn her heel, and it's just made her into more of a badass, and it's made her into more of an ass kicker like we want to see. It's turned her into more of a last kicker. Ha ha ha. Just like her shirt says. And it's giving us what we want. It's giving us fired up Becky Lynch, and it's really kind of impossible to boo that when it's everything we wanted in the first place. And it seems like WWE is fully 100% aware of this, and they're not trying to push back against it. They're giving us every opportunity to cheer Becky. What they're doing is they're basically putting Charlotte and Becky out there as two people who have a story and have an issue with one another, and they're letting the crowd choose. And the nice thing about it is that because the entire crowd essentially is on Becky Lynch's side and not on Charlotte Flair's side, it feels like there's a hero and a villain, even if there isn't technically the way it's written. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. My biggest fear going into this show was how they were going to handle this.
Yeah,
because
me too.
It's like, I never thought that Becky Lynch could be this over. Legit. I knew that she would be over and stuff, but like, she is over, like, to the point where she was the biggest star at SummerSlam, at the SmackDown after SummerSlam, and on this show. Bigger than any man on the card. She got more of a reaction than AJ, Joe, Brian, anybody.
When I say it feels like Austin, like, I mean, it's not quite that big, but I'm not just drawing conclusions out of nowhere, right?
No,
like,
no, no. She,
because we're watching Austin on Retro Raw, and the crowd wants Austin all the time. And Austin's still, like, he's still kind of a dick. Like, he's not a true babyface. I refuse to believe that he's, like, a true babyface. It's just he's the one that everyone wants to see, and we are allowed to cheer him. But he's still an asshole to everybody. And Becky's not even that. Becky's not as much of an asshole as Steve Austin was. Like, she's just standing up for herself.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a long way to go, but I think that she's, you know, I'm really happy with what they did with her on this show. I don't even know if you need to do a double turn, because maybe it's organically just going to go the way that everybody thinks it's going to go. But I thought this was great. I loved the line "you bitch" at the end, just like, you know, oh, you bitch. Like, she just can't be bothered with her. So I thought it was great, and I think saving it for the end of the show was a good sign. And I'm kind of curious to see what they do next week with Becky. I think we've got one more. Is it one more? Two more SmackDowns to go before Hell in a Cell. But I'm feeling quietly optimistic.
I'm pretty optimistic about this, too. I am really, really, really looking forward to their eventual confrontation in ring. I think this is the most compelling story for me on SmackDown right now. It has eclipsed Daniel Bryan and The Miz, even. And I'm still super into that. And I'm into AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. So, but Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair is the most important thing. I would love to see Becky versus Charlotte main event Hell in a Cell. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to see it main event Hell in a Cell, and I think there's a case to be made for it. Not just because I'm like, I would love to see women main event again, but because it is my favorite story that they're telling right now. Yeah, this show was a big old thumbs up for me. I thought they did excellent work basically throughout. And I love it. I am so, 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 so glad that we're not trying to just pretend that Becky Lynch is an evil, evil heel and Charlotte Flair is a great and valiant babyface, because I think that would be a misstep, and that would not feel authentic or organic. And I like when there's that give and take between the crowd and the company. So I'm all in for it.
We don't need no Roman Reigns here, bitch.
Nope, we sure don't.
Yeah, big old thumbs up from me. Great show. You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985, SondraRuthRW, Inside_the Ropes, Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of bonus content, YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for a ton of interview content, and InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets for tickets to Pat Patterson and Edge. Watch out for this Saturday night during All In, when we will be revealing another guest for Glasgow for Inside the Ropes. So that should be pretty cool. Watch out for that. To play as
I don't even know about this. Text it to me.
Well, I think the only person that can play us out is Becky Lynch.
I love her. Straight fire forever.
Here's Becky Lynch, and thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for all your support. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.